Manx Radio's Countryside is brought to you by NFU Mutual.
Hello and welcome to Countryside here on Manx Radio. I'm Simon Clark.
And I'm Kiri Kermode. This week we hear from Ruth Mead from Redmi, talking about springtime on the farm, Manx March campaign, and getting Manx locked in on the menus around the Isle of Man.
Well, with the possible rise in local fuels here on the Isle of Man, I speak to contractor Kenny Cool to find out if there's going to be any problems in that area. And also I find out the latest at the start of Shenagas Dew Week. Well, welcome to another Countryside programme. Plenty of variety to fit in this week's programme. Kiri, it's another mixed bag of weather that we've had. And we like to start with the weather, but it's so crucial in the farming world and anything to do with the countryside, events that are going on, isn't it?
Oh, totally governs absolutely everything. And this time of year, springtime on the farm is busy for crops, livestock, lambing, calving, you name it, it's all happening at the moment.
Yeah, and of course, there seems to be a bit of panic around with the fuel situation because of various things happening around the world. And of course, it's one of the things that agriculture relies on, and the building construction work here on the Isle of Man as well, with the fuel prices of deliveries and everything like that. Well, contractors face the same problems, and even more, I suppose, with farmers on very tight margins at times. So I went to find out from local contractor Kenny Cool how possibly the rise in local fuels would affect contractors and farmers. Well, firstly, Kenny, is it a busy time of year for yourselves as contractors?
Well, it should be, but it's a bit wet at the moment, so it's a bit frustrating. It's a little bit behind, but we're just waiting to get some decent weather to get in the fields to get something done, really. Get some ploughing done, muck spreading, and really we should be sowing corn, but haven't really done much of that yet.
But even with the modern tractors with the four-wheel drive and everything, is the problem rooting up the ground, or is it just purely that it's pointless doing it because things won't grow?
Yeah, the conditions need to be right, really. I mean, you can get through it, but it's far better if the right ground is dry and you're not just making a mess, basically, in mud. Nobody likes mud.
But the fact is, you mentioned about the ploughing there. Are some farms, I hear, are moving away from ploughing slightly and just sort of disking and cultivating a bit? Has that been the case?
A little bit. There's a few people tried it, mostly, I'm still mostly ploughing, to be fair. You know, weed control and stuff like that. It's by the time you spray the weeds and then min till it, there's not much in it, I don't think, really.
When we talk about see the ploughing matches going ahead there, mm-hmm. with the precision and everything like that, and maybe a single or two furrow ploughs that's involved in some of them, three furrow classes, the ploughs yourselves are using now, will it be five furrows?
I've got five and four, turnover, so we can get a bit done. So it's a little bit awkward and in the smaller fields, but you just got to make sure that the big tractors are burning a lot of fuel, so you need to have something decent behind it to justify burning that fuel.
Is everyone contracting wise on reversible ploughs in this day and age? There's no buys and clashes done?
No, there's no buys and clashes. Yeah, you go back and forward now. And nobody really wants them humps and hollows in their fields anymore. So, and it's quicker. It's quicker. It took a while in the Isle of Man. I mean, you know, it takes a bit longer, but yeah.
And what acreage could you get done in a day ploughing on decent enough fields?
It's in decent enough fields, I suppose you'd be looking at 20 acres, but it's very rarely you can get in a decent big field like that. And you know, you can whip through the field quite quickly, and then you come to do the headlands, and you're back and forward scratching about, and the plough will be jamming in the corners and stuff, and it just takes a little bit of time, like, you know. The Manx countryside is beautiful and lovely, all the hedges and everything, but it can be a pain sometimes when you're trying to get around all these corners with the big machines and getting in around the hedges.
You mentioned about the fuel there. Well, that's one thing that's been brought up a lot of recent times with what's happening with fuel prices. I mean, if they suddenly shoot up tomorrow, Kenny, I mean, how does that work with people you're already saying you're going to plough this and do that? Because it could get quite a jump.
It could do. It could do it, but we'll just have to wait to see what happens, I think. I haven't heard, actually. I mean, I've done all the panic buying. Every drum and barrel and tank is full of fuel on the old price. I've got another order in. I'm assuming that'll be from the new boat that's come in. There's a new boat due in now, I think. So that could be quite a big jump. I don't know. But, it might have to... I mean, I don't know. By putting prices up and stuff, I don't want to rip anybody else but off, but I don't want to rip myself off either. So it's just something we're going to have to work out between us, between me and the farmers, and just try to figure it out, really, to see what and how long, how much it goes up and how long for. It went up before. A few years ago, but and it came back down again. So we'll just have to wait and see. It's a bit uncertain, really.
Yeah, and that's the trouble with it, isn't it? And when you look back at people just with their maybe diesel cars and things like that, who'll fill it up 60 litres or something like that, and it'll do them a week or 2 weeks or a month if you're living in Douglas.
Yeah.
But I mean, what capacity and what fuel is your machines using in a day, Ken?
It varies on the jobs. Like, I mean, that big class tractor, it holds over 400 litres. Like, you wouldn't barely burn all that in a day. But the frustrating thing is, you see, of all this lot happened in October, I only filled up the tanks twice through the winter when I've been scratching around, trimming hedges and fencing and not even burning much fuel. But now we are going to start to get busy. I'm assuming the sun will come out at some time and we're going to get busy and all these tractors are going to be moving, so there's going to be a lot of fuel burned. And, a few pence a litre is going to make quite a difference to the amount of fills we're going to be using here.
Yeah, because you look at, we mentioned the TT, it's a lot of sort of sign where farmers are cutting silage and the contractors are out absolutely flat out day and whatever time of night you can get into. And it's not just one vehicle involved in that.
No, I've got a young fellow is working with me now, so we're mostly out with two tractors, like, and he's good to keep going. So we're full, there's two tractors more or less going full time. So and sometimes get extra help in. So it'll be three tractors going, and that'll be quite a big fuel cost to keep an umlaut going, like.
But of course, when times are changing, prices are never kept the same, whether it's dairy or beef or lamb or anything like that, Kenny. So it must be difficult, obviously, as you said before, if there's a massive rise in the fuel, and you have to tell the customers, I'm losing money if I do this. How difficult a thing is that?
It is, because, I mean, when you go to a dairy, do a job for a dairy farmer, he's telling me that the milk price has just gone down, and you go to a beef farmer and he's complaining about the meat plant and the stagger and stuff. So it's difficult to tell them that the price will be going up, but it's just something we'll have to work out together and try and come to some sort of agreement. We've all got to live. I mean, it's just, we'll just have to try and work through it, and hopefully it doesn't go up too much.
Kenny Cool there, and it's one of them unknown things, as Kenny says, it's difficult to say to farmers, or it's, sorry, I'm going to have to charge you so many pounds more this time and what have you, when they're probably all relying on that's what we hope it's going to be, but it's just a bit up in the air, isn't it?
This is it. You budget for a certain cost throughout the year. The contracting's in a certain box. but global conflict is happening more and more, and it is affecting us, that knock-on effect. And I think we are, as farmers and whoever you are on the Isle of Man, are going to have to put aside some money for contingency, I suppose.
Yeah, and you look at them, when Kenny was talking about that tractor, you know, it holds 400 litres of fuel.
Wow.
You can use 300 in a day doing stuff, you know. Gets a lot of work done, but it's still got to be accounted for somewhere along the line. So.
And this is it. And they're all economically, you know, technology has grown within the mechanical side of the industry. So it's not just guzzling fuel. It's there and it's being measured properly. So it is hard, very hard to project what's going to happen this year.
It is. Well, of course, a busy lady and a busy fella that's Stuart's with her is Ruth Mead.
This is it. Red Mye is always a busy place and do great promotion for Manx produce. I caught up with Ruth just ahead of lambing time to see what's happening this springtime on their farm. Well, Ruth, I've stolen you away from the farm. No doubt it's a very, very busy time. Springtime is always exciting, though.
Yes, it is. And it's really nice to sit down for half an hour. Feels a bit like cheating, but here we are. So, yeah, it's a really busy week this week. We're preparing for our first visitors of 2026 in 3 days' time.
Oh, my word. That is no pressure.
No, I know. So, yeah, the ewes are all due to give birth any moment now. We're busy potting on chilies. So the chilies are coming on really well this year. We're really pleased with that. The hens are coming back into lay, the ducks are laying really well, so it's definitely spring.
It is so exciting, isn't it? And given there was a little bit of, I don't know what the word is, with the bird flu, getting the new poultry onto the island, getting, you know, fresh poultry, young poultry onto the farm has been tricky as well for you.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't any restrictions, thankfully, but you're always really concerned that a restriction might come in at any moment in an area where you need to travel through, so... this year we did take some sort of precautions where we housed the birds a bit differently over winter. So we've now got to persuade them to go back to their summer housing, and chickens really don't like change. So it requires us to put about 150 birds, about 100 are getting it, but about 150 birds last night were also outside the old door and we had to hand put them to bed.
Oh, that is so lovely, isn't it? That is great. And I'm sure they're really excited to see the visitors as well, because, you know, Lamb and Live is just around the corner.
Yeah, everybody gets really excited for visitors. The hens, they get extra corn. The sheep get hand fed. They really love it. And as a result of having lots of visitors, our animals are really, really used to people, and they do look forward to it. And sometimes when people come down the yard outside of the Lamb and Live times, animals do just queue up and look at them like, and where's the snacks?
And how much effort does it take to you know, put on these events, Ruth?
So there's a huge amount of preparation that has to go in beforehand. So farms safely working for farmers is one thing, but making them safe for the public is a whole new level of care. So we have to make sure everything is very, very tidy, very, very clean. And then we have to set up pens and things in such a way that it's good for the animals and good for the people. So we've got to keep both sides of the fence safe.
And that's it. And I suppose you do lots of courses. You know, you go away to learn about the educational side of it. But it's ever evolving. We want people on the farms, don't we? So, you know, to get them fresh ideas, to get them through the gate is so important.
Yeah. And it's really great to have the conversations with people. And every year lots of people go home knowing something that they didn't know before. They're surprised. We have some brilliant conversations on farms. And you know, and sometimes people ask us a question and it just starts a conversation between the whole group. And our groups are in small numbers. There's only ever 20 in a group, really. And yeah, and we get to talk about the why we do what we do and you know, how things affect, you know, the knock-on effect of things like, well, today we've got the fuel price rises. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have a think about, you know, how that's impacting us, how we can minimise that, where we might need to consider passing on some costs. And it's a really tricky balance because everybody's squeezed. So you don't want to pass on costs. But at the same time, we have to remain profitable and be able to pay ourselves because we have living expenses just like everybody else.
And that said, with keeping animals, you know, you use those animals for food, they're farmed in a sustainable way, that you have that life cycle, and you keep locked-ins. Now, they are a longer-term project, really. You know, by the time you bred them and raised them, they're slower growing. But you are doing that bit to try and get the local produce to the local consumer.
Yes, so the Lockton, you know, we keep them for around about 2 years, usually. So there is a bit of a balance. The Lockton are very low maintenance sheep. We love them. They are the last native farm animal to the Isle of Man. They came over with the Vikings, so they're a really important part of our heritage, and we do need to preserve them for future generations. And yeah, I mean, we've got some exciting things happening with the Lockton. We have a breeders group. So if you've got some Lockton and you've not been in touch with us, we'd really like to hear from you. Just getting a group of people together to promote the breed and keep it sustainable is really important. And then we've been having some great conversations, and Lee from Oakles, he's been amazing. He's their chef there. And he's taking Lockton on a regular basis. He wants to see it in every pub every week. So we're super grateful for that. I've been working with other breeders to source stock to try and keep the continuous supply. And it's a chicken and egg situation. You've got to have the continuous demand to get the continuous supply. So which comes first? Yeah. And Lee, he's taken a big leap of faith. And he's, you know, he's said, yeah, we're in for the long haul. Let's do this. And so, yeah, at the minute, the Whitestone have got it on the menu. And the plan is to roll it out across all of the Heron and Brayley Oakles sites.
How exciting is that? That is just a feather in your hat, I bet. You've been campaigning for years to get the Lockton to our consumers.
Yeah, and at the moment, you know, most people have to buy a substantial amount of the meat because it's less readily available. But this way, if you've never had Lockton, get out and try it.
Is it? And Lockton isn't farmed commercially. We don't see too many of them around the Isle of Man. You know, they are farmed in a very different way. But there seems to be a bit of a resurgence into keeping a few Locktons now.
Yes, and we've got some, without wanting to offend anyone, some younger breeders. you know, it kind of drifted. And they are hard to fit into your typical commercial setup where you plan for only keeping the offspring for a shorter amount of time. But yes, there's more and more people who've got a pocket of Locktons on the farm. And that's really, really important for the breed, having lots of sites. One big farm is going to put the Lockton at risk if they have a big problem. Yeah. You know, you're hearing about foot and mouth in Europe. So the more holdings that have Lockton, the better for the breed.
And that is it, is keeping them for the future. But there's so many uses from them. You see people using their wool, they're changing up the products, you know, making charcuterie. It's great that people have been innovative with the breed.
Yeah, it's really exciting. And you know, it is a different flavour. So it's a stronger flavour to your lamb. They're slower growing. So it's, you know, closer to venison, really. And so you get different, you know, really different flavours. A few years back, we did a Magez sausage that got a 2-star Great Taste Award. And that was just super tasty. We loved it. And one of the judges' comments said it was the best Magez they'd ever had, which, you know, obviously made us feel really great.
See, it's all part of the marketing side of it. You know, these are other people's opinions, giving their feedback. You know, some of them are some of the top chefs around the world. You know, the Great Taste is a huge competition. So to be recognised at that level is so special.
Yes. And you know, having someone else sort of give you the validation, because when you're out there and you're trying something new, it kind of, your stomach does turn a little bit, like, oh gosh, you know, I hope people like this, because... You know, it's about bringing joy to people, you know, through food and, you know. And
you are more passionate than anybody. And given the food side of it, the chilies, what a business that has. It's grown and grown.
I know. And to think back in, I think it was 2021, I said to Stuart, I'm not sure that the Isle of Man has much call for chili. Here we are with a chili farm. So we've got 4 times the growing space purely for chilies that we started with now. We've got a huge number of plants in the propagator. They're looking really good, touch wood, don't want to tempt fate. and so, you know, we even have like the Chilean Barbecue Festival that's 12th of September this year. you know, and that was really great last year in Oncombe Park. We're back there again this year. So we're going to do loads more fun stuff. We've got some really exciting plans that we're talking about now.
Oh, my word. It's hard to believe, but it's grown and grown. And that passion for Manx as well, it spurs you on.
It does, yeah, yeah. And, you know, we really appreciate every bit of support. It's just, it's like a little hug every time someone, you know, tells us that they've enjoyed something we've produced. And, you know, it's...
And what kind of effort and work goes into producing the chilies, Ruth? Because, you know, you're saying you've got them in little pots now. To get that amount of chilies grown, it must be a huge effort.
I'd like to say it's a huge effort on my part, but it's not. It's really down to Stuart. But yes, he spends long hours sowing seeds. We've sowed several thousand seeds this spring. And you have to allow for some wastage at each stage, some, you know, poor germination rates. So we always overplant. We will have some surplus plugs for sale of the ones that germinated really well shortly. And he's now already, we've got to the stage where he's potting on into slightly bigger pots to let the roots develop, and then second week of May is planting out week.
Wow, so let's hope for some good weather then. Yeah. And how do you pick your varieties? Because I've been told there is thousands of varieties.
There are so many varieties. I had no idea. And there's different flavours. So you've got not only the different heats where you've got really, really mild, like your Padrons and your Carolina Reaper, which is one that everybody knows, stupidly hot, and the flavour's actually not that great. But in the middle, you've got some beautiful, beautiful chilies. So Scotch Bonnet and Habanero are probably the ones we get the most use out of. But my favourite's an Aji Lemon, and it's got a citrus flavour. You can taste the lemon on it. And there's Pepper Peach, which is a milder chili. And Stuart puts that into a chili millish. You know, so we do the jalapeno chili millish, but then there's a milder chili millish that's just got really sweet chilies. So there's just a tingle.
It's fantastic. But like you say, you're doing the whole process from growing them to putting them, obviously, for the pots and then sale as well. Yeah. You know, the actual final product. Oh, gosh. It must be something else when you finally see them jars going out the door.
I know. And it can feel like quite a long winter. So, you know, and this is something that, you know, on our farm days, we talk about the seasonality of our job. And, you know, we go through, like, at the end of summer, we have to make sure we've got enough finance behind us to survive the winter personally. Like, so, you know, our weekly shop, our regular bills that everybody else has, but then also have enough money left over to buy seeds and compost and the pellets that we plant them in. You know, and we spend thousands on seeds. You know, it's a big, big cost. And, yeah.
Getting all of the local support behind you is so essential. And having the festival will be that great form of advertisement.
Yeah, and it's great because we'll have the samples. There'll be other food vendors using our chilies to cook up different things. So it's inspirational, really. Like, you can just get some ideas. Come and ideas harvest from us.
And it's that passion, Ruth. It goes through everything to do with Red Mai. You know, whether it is having the springtime on the farm, the educational side, whether it's growing, the seasonality. What gives you the drive to do all of this?
I just love the fulfilment that it brings. So seeing a seed in January, February, and then harvesting chilies, or seeing a lamb born, caring for your flock, your chickens hatching them out, you know, and just seeing that complete cycle. And I don't know, I get a lot of reassurance that we're able to produce our own food, which is super, super important. And we've got the know-how, so we can grow. We've got eggs, we've got meat. And, you know, even when times are lean, we never go hungry. And aren't we super lucky to be in that position?
Is that known that you've produced something with your own fair hands and the taste, the flavour, and you know you've preserved it for the years to come as well with your breeding, the genetics and the way you do it?
Yeah, and also having the youngsters on the farm and educating them, like, this is how food is produced, this is what happens, so that they then have that knowledge, even if it's in the background of their head. And I don't know, I'd like to think maybe one or two people might consider farming as a career, because we're not from farming stock. We're very much not farming stock. This is kind of something we've stumbled into midlife. You know, we love it. We really, really love it.
There we go. That was Ruth Mead from Red Mai. A very busy lady, but always great to chat to. So passionate about Manx produce.
Yeah, and try to get involved in everything, really. Something different, something new. The chilies, why would?
Oh, they'll set you back.
Put a tickle on your tongue, don't they? But it is great, and it's great that we've got enthusiastic people like this. And we're not alone with Ruth and Stuart. There are lots of people around the Isle of Man striving to just... provide something for local people that's local.
This is it, the Manx Lochdyn, a heritage breed, you know, getting the breeders together, trying to keep them encouraged, getting the marketing done out there, you know, getting that great produce to our island's people. It's so special, but, you know, it takes hunger and drive to do it, and well done to all of them.
You're listening to Countryside here on Manx Radio with Kiri Kermode and myself, Simon Clark. Well, Kiri, in the past and coming up probably, we get involved in a lot of the countryside events that happen around the island. There's some song and dance off the professional side and some not quite so professional, as we witnessed at the Young Farmers Concert of recent times. But... the Shenica Stew has been going quite a while, and it starts this week. It's got a lot of country roots, and to find out more about this year's programme, I spoke to June Garrett.
Well, June, you've been at the forefront of Shenica Stew for many years, and here you are again. Didn't expect to see you.
It's been a little bit. I've been threatening to step down for a few years, but we're here, but I think this year is officially our final in the present form, so we will see what happens. We're going to take some time out over the next year, pull our bridges together and see where we're up to, but certainly at the moment in its present form, we're coming to an end at the end of this year.
Well, it starts on Thursday, is the opening address for it all. What's the programme got in store this time? Because you're not just limited to big orchestras, big bands that play in big cities, are you?
No, we've got lots of groups coming from all over the Celtic world this year, from our small countryside towns in Cornwall, and people from Scotland and Ireland, Killarney, little farming stock, Killarney, into the big towns of Killarney. But we're basically got people from all over the Celtic world, and our local musicians and dancers from around the Isle of Man too. So we've got lots in stock, concerts and ceilidhs and small gigs. An intimate venue, so the full range of events.
Well, you've been there from the start, June, I think, and where did it all stem from?
I think for me it was as I grew up involved in the culture through our local group, Na Féiní. We spent an awful lot of time by winter and the summer seasons going to little do's in the countryside. We would be at the Eel Verras in Kirkmichael, or we'd be at a Manx Tay at Bride, or the Laxey Fair, or all those little small events that just were part of the Manx calendar as I grew up. So that was where my interest developed, and where we really took off from there and grew.
But it's not an easy thing to put on. Has it got harder over the years since when you started?
Certainly, I think certainly from a financial point of view, it's really more difficult than ever before. I think as the event grew, obviously we had to grow with it and fit into our new surroundings. So I think just from the basis of a financial point of view, it's definitely grown. But also from that point of view of bringing people in to be involved, we've got a great group of people who are there all year, but finding new people to come through and have that time in the modern world to give their time freely and commit to it full time is becoming more tricky.
But it's a massive part of Isle of Man culture, isn't it? The Manx music, the Manx dancing, and seeing how they do it in the likes of Britain and Cornwall and places, which I suppose have got a similar sort of feel to their music.
Yeah, you know, I think the Celtic patterns and the music, you know, from wherever we come in the world, it has similarities. Same with the dance, whether it's circles or line dances or social occasions. I think that's where that social gathering of people and like-minded people have come together. So we've got similarities right across from the Celtic world, but also our uniqueness as well alongside it. So it's really a great time that all people, but our young people especially, can share that culture and share that identity with people from across the Celtic nations.
Well, of course, the feedback, I've been to quite a few of them as well, the feedback that you get when you're talking, listening to the people talking, maybe coming to the Isle of Man for the first time. It's just great feedback that you get. And I suppose it's the same when yourselves go and visit the other places as well?
Yeah, the chance to perform off the Isle of Man is hugely important, especially for our young people to go and see that they're not just part of this small individualistic culture on the Isle of Man. It's part of something bigger, whether that's shared with our Celtic nations or international dance music and dance. There's that camaraderie and that lovely nature of sharing ideas and meeting new people. I think that's the main thing, that meeting new people and having that chance to enjoy each other's customs and each other's traditions in that way is hugely enlivening to lots of people, and me included.
And so gets underway Thursday, and what's on the agenda for this year? How many days does it run for?
We're running from Thursday till Sunday, so we've got our opening on Thursday, but we've added an extra night of Ceilidh dance and music dance this year, because we felt that with it being our last in the present form, we were going to go out with a big bang. So we're Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Ceilidh's in the Masonic in Ramsey, and then we've got our big concert in Peel on Sunday afternoon, a whole day of events in Ramsey on Saturday. And this year we've gone back a little bit to our roots, and we started our events many years ago in the local churches, and so we're going to Lazare Church for a concert on Friday afternoon. So we have a whole range of different events.
You've taken part in them? I still remember the big bandage on the thumb from the stick dance.
Unfortunately, my dancing days are a little bit of an ebb at the moment, but still definitely in part. I'm still definitely one of the organisation. I will be seen on stage, no doubt, introducing people and making sure things are running smoothly in the background. But I might get the odd Ceilidh dance in for 5 or 10 minutes before I have to sit down.
And that's what's special about it, isn't it? And when you see the groups getting up, doing their bit, the Isle of Man, go and Shenagas Dhu do their bit, and Feeney, and when you see the other groups as well, and when they all finish, they're all just hugging and chatting about it. Oh, where did you learn that move? That's slightly different than ours. And it's great for education, isn't it?
It is. I think the one thing that I take away over the last 27 festivals is just that friendship that comes about during festivals, and the young people that have grown up with it but made friends along the way. So we've got lots of friends coming back this year for our final special year. And just that camaraderie and that love of being with each other and meeting new people is second to none. And I think it's really important for our youth, but also for all generations to share their ideas and see that spirit of families being together and taking part in things together and having somewhere to go together is really important.
Finally, is it a worry for fans of Shenagas Dhu what the future holds?
Yeah, I think it's a worry. It's a worry in the fact that, for me personally, being involved with it since I was young and making sure that we have something that young people can come and do and share these ideas. So I'm going to take stock, and we're going to take stock and see how we can best do that moving forward. But without the strain of organising events right the way throughout the year just to hit our financial targets. So that sort of thing has become more difficult. So the worry is making sure that there's something in the line in the future that young people can come and share their ideas and join and meet up with their families to enjoy fun and social occasions together.
June Garrett from Shenagas Dhu, which gets underway this Thursday with a great programme of events around the Isle of Man. And it's sad to hear that, you know, that they may be struggling.
Yeah. This is it. There's a lot of young people coming through. It is getting brought into schools again, the Manx dance and the Manx language. And it has been a bit of a resurgence more recently. They're doing a good job. But just to keep that heritage and culture alive, more people have got to get involved.
Yeah, and that's the difficult thing. You know, the same people have ran stuff for many years. And this happens in a lot of organisations here on the Isle of Man. And now I don't know what it is, whether people don't have time, or they just say they don't have time to help out, and it's left to the same people who have been doing it for years. And I think that's one of the dying things of the Isle of Man, possibly.
Well, I suppose we've got to be positive, as we always are on Countryside, and let's hope that there's people out there listening that can help and get involved. And the more we can get into the curriculum around the island, this is our history. It should be taught. It should be looked after.
It is indeed. Well, on that positive lecture from my compatriot here, we'll leave it there for this week's Countryside. We're back next week with the last in this current series. So until then, from me, Simon Clark.
I'm Kerry Kerr.
We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.